Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing to register for a meeting near you.
This is the February 13 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Bill Lapp. He's at Advanced Economic Solutions out of Omaha, Nebraska. Elaine Cubb joins us from Ipswich, South Dakota. Chip Nellinger is here from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He's in Morton, Illinois normally, but is at the Louisville Farm Show today. And Mike Zuzlow is at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to us online at willag.org, willag.org. There you can buy your tickets to the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's coming up on the third day of March. We'll have 17 analysts up on stage with us, including, in fact, Mike Zuzlow and Chip Nellinger. Among them, they're our regular panelists on the daily radio programming at Illinois Public Media. We'll also take a look at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions. Gary Schnitke will be there, University of Illinois Ag Economist, to talk about the ARC PLC decision, SCO as it relates to PLC and crop insurance, and ARC-IC, if you happen to have a prevent plant acre or farm from last year. It should be a great program. Oh, and Steve Malberger will be there, too, to take a look at the future of agriculture. It'll be interesting to see what he has to say. You can find your tickets online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, let's get right into Commodity Week. Bill Lapp is here. Again, he's at Advanced Economic Solutions out of Omaha, Nebraska. Bill, it's been a while since we've had you on the program. Why don't you remind us what it is that you do there?
Sure, I'd be glad to, and thank you for having me on today. Advanced Economic Solutions is an independent commodity forecasting and economic analysis shop. We have been in business about 15 years ago. I founded it. And we work primarily with end users, restaurants, food manufacturers, but we also have a couple of governmental agencies, a couple of investment firms, and some people on the production side of agriculture as well. So we try to provide people with insights, let them know what risks lie ahead, and give them some idea through our forecasts where commodity prices that are going. You can think of it as anything that goes through the back door of a restaurant, we're often called upon to provide some insights as to what the price might be going forward.
How does that differ very much from the side we're talking about today as it relates to farmer and cash sales?
Well, both are work into perpetuity. In other words, a trader is worried about what might happen tomorrow, but a producer is who owns property or owns his land is going to be producing year after year. He has a lot of fixed costs. And the same goes for me is just on the opposite side that these end users, these procurement people at restaurants are considering themselves to be in business in the long haul. So they know that they have to plan not only short term, but long term as well in terms of their risk management strategies.
Mike Zuzlow, do you have a question that you'd like to ask Bill?
Yeah, Bill, I'll give you a choice. Would you like a big picture question or more of a short-term question?
Let's start with the short-term.
Okay. I guess one of the things that the clients on the producer level that you work with and that I work with are wondering right now is when will the market come back to what is the U.S. production for 2019, especially going into a brand new forward-looking acreage number from USDA tomorrow. And what's your thoughts on that?
When will they readdress the 2019 crop size, do you mean?
Yeah, exactly, the futures market especially. I know the cash market's dealing with it in the basis, but really the futures market.
Well, that's a good question in terms of there being a lot of uncertainties. We're going through kind of the doldrums of the winter, really. We're starting to see South American crop risks abate, where we have a better idea of what kind of soybean crop, at least Brazil's going to have. We're still awaiting what's going to happen on the corn side. And I think that you start to see things clear up a little more step by step. The Feb 21 USDA report will give us some idea on the acreage. And I think when it's in print from USDA, it'll become a greater reality. I think that every week that goes by with coronavirus and really a lack of any action on the phase one trade deal in terms of sales casts a little more doubt into where we might be the price potential for the crops going forward. So I don't know if that exactly answered your question, but I think that for there to be for me, the risk of a rally and for producers, the opportunity of a rally in the corn and soybeans, the next greatest opportunity is either waking up tomorrow and finding out that China actually did purchase some corn, wheat, soybeans, pork, or starting to see weather problems evolve.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you. I think the weather pattern, too, going into spring has got to be, I would think, something the futures traders will start to look at as we get into March. If it's still snowing and 10 degrees in North Dakota, maybe they'll start to double back on that kind of a mindset.
And Mike, you'll be able to ask that question, by the way, of Lance Honig, too, over at the All Day Ag Outlook. I forgot about him when I was promoing that up front, but he's the chief of the crops branch at USDA NAS in Washington, D.C. He won't be able to address, of course, Mike, when the futures will take it into account, but NAS is resurveying, and he'll be able to kind of give us an idea of what they're thinking as it relates to those five states, which Elaine Cubb includes South Dakota, and how they're going to address the standing corn. Can you give me a kind of quick update of what the corn harvest looks like in your part of the world? And if you've got a question then of Bill, go ahead and ask that too.
Yeah, I sure can. In fact, I just took a little road trip up through eastern North Dakota over the weekend, so I was right in the thick of it. And let me tell you, it is still weird to see standing corn in 2 feet of snow. And it is still standing. So to the degree that the USDA has been calling that on-farm stocks, I guess technically it's still holding up. Depending on how these things melt, what kind of wind storms we get through the remainder of winter, it may continue to stand. But there is still areas of North Dakota where there would be 70% still unharvested. And where I am in eastern South Dakota, you'd say more like 5 to 10%, especially if you start counting all the end rows that had to remain in the drifts. But, you know, this is kind of in the weeds, and I think Bill Lapp is a good opportunity to get more of these big picture things. But I'll kind of build on Mike's question about and your response about the coronavirus. Bill, do you think that your clients, the end users, the ag businesses, the consumers of these commodities, do they really from day to day trade based on these headlines or the coronavirus, or is it just sort of business as usual and a program from 1 week to the next?
I think they, when you see a decline in prices, much like a producer when he sees an increase in prices, I think you have to have the discipline and be agnostic enough to say, this is an opportunity, and I'm not going to view this as the first leg of a major move up. I think you have to look at it, or in my case, one market that's taken a tremendous drop has been the soybean oil market. And that's a key market for a lot of people in the restaurant business. And as we saw prices go from 35 cents to 32 or 31 cents, you're seeing big drops. And my first advice is not to say, well, we've got coronavirus, so let's wait. It's rather to say, let's take advantage of this 10% drop here in the price of something you're going to need. And if it continues to drop, let's add more coverage later down the road. So I look at rather than looking at the headlines as a dictating what maybe their strategy should be, I typically would advise them to simply take advantage of those price moves without regard to why they happen.
Chip Nellinger there at the, and by the way, can you give me a sense of how farmers are feeling there? But you're there at the Farm Machinery Show in Louisville, Kentucky. Can you give me that sense, and do you have a question for Bill as well?
Yeah, I would just comment that as far as farmer perceptions or feelings right now, uneasy, I think, is the best way to to put that in my experience here of the last couple of months, and concerned, nervous, apprehensive, you know, hopeful that China's going to step up and buy some U.S. ag commodities as part of this phase one. And I would circle back as my question to Bill, what his opinion is of when and if China is going to step up to the plate, and if this coronavirus issue, in his opinion, is going to derail that or delay it.
Yeah, it's a great question. I have been really disappointed in the purchases or lack thereof that China's made. I thought, at least as a goodwill gesture, right out of the gate, we would see China buy 1 million tons of wheat. I thought wheat was ground zero. And instead, we've seen China purchase, which they normally do, a significant quantity, about 500,000 tons of Australian wheat. We've seen the open sales left to ship on soybeans dwindle down sharply and steadily over the last couple of months. China's been buying Brazilian soybeans. And so it kind of, I didn't know at the time how much credence to put in the words of President Xi when he signed the agreement that we are going to make these purchases based on market conditions. And as we go forward, it seems to be that they're using that as a reason to make whatever purchase patterns they normally would have, which would be Brazilian soybeans at this point in time. There's been a regular increase, a steady increase, I should say, in terms of sales and shipments of pork to China, but not enough to prevent the hog futures from going down. And I think that in terms of the coronavirus, I think you could argue that this gave China a rationale for reducing their phase one expectations. And it gave really the U.S. Trade rep a rationale for saying we think the trade deal's intact, but China just can't buy that right now because of the coronavirus. I don't know what to make of it, and I don't know what the timing will be when they'll come, but I certainly have been disappointed thus far.
Mike, do you have that big picture question still in mind?
Yeah, I guess turning to kind of the mindset of the acreage base coming up this year and what USDA was forecasting for a decline in CRP, I'm getting pretty strong feedback that specialty crops, organic crops, especially soybeans, sorghum, these are going to be what producers go after, Bill. I wanted to find out if you do the micro level acreage analysis and what you're seeing for 2020. And I guess to me, it seems like, yeah, we can get to 94 million or 94 and a half million on corn, but it seems like over that, it's kind of a bridge too far at this point, just because of, even with the MFP payments, it seems like producers are really scratching the bottom at this point as far as making ends meet.
Yeah, we need about 90 million acres. And I think with an MFP in 2018 based on acreage planted, an MFP in 2019 based on acreage planted, what's going to happen in 2020 in election year? I think if I'm a producer, I'm going to see what crops were eligible in previous years, and I'm going to choose amongst those. In the Red River Valley in particular, up in North Dakota, and maybe Lane can comment on this too, that, you know, the sugar beet crop had a problem, and there was a prices have surged there. Dry edible beans, pinto beans up there are favored. Mustard seed, a variety of crops that producers might be able to switch. But by and large, when you get into a state like Iowa or another Midwest state where it's corn and soybean rotation for the vast majority, I think those are the two you're going to have to choose from. And I've had this question asked, with prices and returns lower, are there going to be reduced payments? And I think because of the prospect of another MFP, more money from the government, I think producers are going to plant normally or maybe more acres. You know, there'll be some switching to Milo. We've already seen in the January 10th report on winter wheat acreage that we're going to have a decline in winter wheat seedings, in hard wheat seedings, I should say, actually. So there's a moving away from that. But I think it's reasonable to say we're going to be 93 million acres, plus or minus, maybe a little bit higher, and some kind of rebound. Typically, I'll just say one other thing. Typically, you would have 2 to 3 million acres of prevent planted area for corn and soybeans. And in the last year, we had 16 million. So I think it's reasonable to expect a pretty sizable rebound in the number of planted acres if Mother Nature allows for it.
I've been doing a lot of thinking about the low futures price, relatively speaking, for corn, and the very narrow basis, meaning a very strong basis in what that means. So what if the USDA production number is right, and that the reason that the basis levels are so strong is that every time a farmer needed to pay a bill, he got an MFP check, and he also got 70% of his basis contract. And so he kept being flush with cash all year long. And does that just smooth out the price of corn in this case over time, taking out the volatility in the marketplace going forward, then saying acreage on the end of March will be a very, very big deal? Anybody have comments or thoughts?
Well, that always has been a behavioral economics question about these MFP payments. And I've heard farmers tell me both ways, is that, ooh, I got this soybean money, so now I feel better about selling $8 soybeans, so I'll just go ahead and sell them. Versus what you mentioned about, ooh, I have this money, now I don't have to sell. I have the cash flow that I can keep going. And like I said, I've heard people say it both ways. I've never seen, you know, any actual data about which of those schools of thought is really prevalent among the farmer population.
Anybody else want to jump in, or am I just off base?
I just got done looking at the cash corn price in certain areas versus the futures price, and did some overlay charts for my webinars for 2020, Todd, and the seminars. And I think you have a genuinely good point, but I would say it's pretty easy to see in most of the charts that the futures premium has been eroded, and it's been a cash premium market essentially ever since the 2012 drought. So I think you probably have a situation other than just one factor driving this. And I would say the way the funds position in the equities versus commodities is how I would explain it. And I think probably the secondary feature that kind of wraps in that is the global supply chain has changed so much, along with the regulations of futures versus options versus OTC contracts. These have all, I think, interacted to promote more of a cash premium, whereas before, when we first grew up and got into the market, the futures market was one to add risk premium and then take it out when more was known, and the futures uncertainty had a premium in it, whereas now it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, I think on-farm storage plays a role in that as well. I agree with Mike that it's probably not the case you can just pin it on one thing. Tremendous amount of on-farm storage has been built the last 5 to 10 years. I think that's changed the flow of grain. And then I think you have some internal logistical issues there as well, where pretty common from the quarterly stocks report, the stocks are in the western and northwestern corn belt. The demand is in the southeast. And it's just logistics of getting some of the supplies where they are to where the demand is, that's keeping, especially the Eastern Corn Belt basis, historically pretty hot right now. So I think it's a combination of everything. The MFP issue probably exaggerates that a little bit and allows farmers to hold on just a little bit longer. But I think the acreage thing is big as well. And this all probably plays into that as well. And I'm probably a little bit biased because I just drove yesterday down here to the farm machinery show in Louisville, and I drove through 5 hours of rain. It stopped raining stopped snowing about Champaign and started raining. And I mean, a lot of rain, and there's water everywhere and the rivers are out and just full soil moisture profile. I think some of the, if you replay that again, I'm not saying it's going to happen. if you replay the whole spring that we just had this past year, again, coming up in 2020, there's going to be way more prevent plant because, in my opinion, because after the fact, it's proven that that was the right decision. The farmers ended up with the extra bump, on the prevent plant. They're going to get, just kind of dribs and drabs along the way. So I think that there's a lot of uncertainty out there, and I'm not so sure that we're not setting up for an interesting spring, and Mother Nature is going to have the final say-so on how many corn acres we do plant.
So, that each and every day of the week, I talked to a different meteorologist, and all 4 days this week, each of them wanted to talk about the rainfall in the Delta region and how saturated those soils were, how much rain they would get, and how the flooding would continue in those parts of the world. And in that same breath, the same thing, I think, and they confirmed this, but you can probably talk about it a little bit, Elaine. The farmers that are in the Dakotas trying to harvest this crop in the snow are still falling through when they get frozen ground, but not the kind of temperatures you have at the moment, and getting stuck. And the big worry in the Red River Valley, which that Red River flows to the north, right, is that they'll have, they've got a all the snow that they can handle, saturated soils, and if it rains, they'll just continue to flood. Everything could be a real mess there, I suppose.
Well, and to Chip's point about how these decisions will finally, ultimately affect spring acres, I don't think, and I think everybody here will agree with me, that as an industry, farmers are going to push these planting dates so late in 2020. If you had another wet spring, we will not be, gambling and cowboying in really late planting the way that folks did to avoid prevent plant last year. I think they're going to take the prevent plant this year rather than having this late planted corn that ends up with the low test weight, et cetera.
I think Chip Nellinger, I want to start with you. Where do you think farmers ought to be? What should they be thinking about? Old and new crop, and you can pick corn or soybeans, your choice.
Yeah, I think old and new, I guess in our mind, you have a few week window here, say between now and maybe the 10th, 15th of March, that if you did see China start to even lightly buy as part of this phase one trade deal, could get a pop in all our markets. And I think that's an opportunity to scale out of old crop corn and beans and start with some 2020 if you haven't already. And we're looking for that as an opportunity if you see that, to also, get some protection with puts. It's just too much uncertainty. We don't know what the slowdown in world growth will be because of this China deal. It appears that South America has monstrous bean crop, particularly in Brazil, plenty of supply in the world. So this is not a year to get bulled up. It's a year to protect and protect equity. And so we are hopeful of some sort of a bounce in the next few weeks to clean up old crop and really get a lot of protection out there as far as 2020 crops go.
Mike, you have a follow-up?
I agree with Chip 100% on the first part of what he's talking about in the 19 and the 20, except that I would say that I'm recommending clients to be prepared for a protein-led demand low in 2020. And so that the sales they make for 2020, I'd rather them be in the cash-related market simply because of what we talked about earlier with the premium in the cash, and then buy the lower valued futures market. A December 450 corn call is now trading below 10 cents. I believe that corn call could probably get in the money, if I'm correct, on the protein shortage that we're going to face globally and the increased feeding that we're going to see around the world to keep the market fed in protein. So I think that protein-led demand low starts relatively soon in the livestock market. And then by the time we get to the June-July time period or maybe August time period in grains, it starts to feel its effect in the grain markets. And I do make a distinction like Chip with the feed grains versus the soybeans just because of the supply side of the soybeans. But I do also recognize that the bean oil market and the vegetable oil market is extremely tight. And kind of thinking about what Bill was talking about earlier, that is an interesting market right now.
Yeah, and just to put some numbers on this, on corn specifically, you know, we've talked on this show that these commodity prices are low, they feel low, farmers are frustrated. But you look at December 20 corn futures at 393, is that really low? I mean, you can sort of pencil out some cost of production numbers. Iowa State University says $3.23 if you're going to grow 199 bushel per acre corn, and I think $219 in cash rent, that gets you 323 cost of production. So there are opportunities right now for some folks. I mean, you can quibble about that cost of production, but there are opportunities right now to be locking in some profits.
Bill, any discussion points?
No, I like the tone of being defensive. The balance sheets on paper, and that's all we have right now, suggest that the 393 target on Dease corn is something you shouldn't turn your head against. And this is not, there may be a protein led rally in the grains due to demand, but I think it's with the dollar as strong as it is versus a Brazilian real that's tanked. I think it's a good year to try to get ahead of the curve on marketings where you can. And the one that has shined out at me for some time is that, December 2020 corn futures number.
Hey, one final thing I want to take up, and I don't know whether anybody will know this or not. Do we know whether the price of corn in Brazil is high enough that it is causing producers there to plant more second crop corn?
I have to believe it is. I don't have a quantity or quantitative exact number on this, but just based on their currency, it would seem to me that it is.
Just as a reference point, the U.S. the price of corn in the U.S. on a percentile basis is somewhere near the 30th or 35th percentile right now. For the Brazilian farmer, when you adjust for the currencies, is somewhere in the 70th or 80th percentile. So this is the competition you're facing when you have a currency adjustment like we've seen over the last 7 or 8 years. And and that's why I say this is a really good year for producers to be defensive in terms of their marketing strategy, that if I miss a rally in the market because I've already sold, I'm not upset. I've played it appropriately. And then I think a lot of that has to do with the weakness in the Brazilian real, and for wheat farmers, the weakness in the Russian ruble.
Your point being that in Brazil, they're looking at good prices, and here in the United States, not so great.
Yes, and that's a little bit of a generalization because their input costs have gone up too, but I think it holds generally true.
Any other topics we should take up?
I think the only one I'd throw out too, Todd, since we're talking more big picture during this commodity week, as it is an election year, and we do have quite a stark difference between the two major parties right now. And I talked to a neighbor who runs an oil and gas company in Oklahoma and Texas, and he said if the Trump administration wins, his mindset and his partner's mindset is pretty solid about the energy sector, but if Bernie Sanders would happen to take the presidency, he would have to tear up pretty much all of his plans for the next 4 years because of the stark differences as far as how commodities are looked at, especially the fossil fuel commodities. So that's something that we do have to think about, and we normally don't have to this go around.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I think Chip Nellinger there in Louisville. I'll get started with you today.
Yeah, I just probably reiterate that I guess our opinion is there's lots of unknowns out there, not only the election, the whole political cycle, this world issue with coronavirus, big supplies out of Brazil, and a favorable currency, that you have to be defensive. And there's ways to position yourself to have your cake and eat it too, where you're protected to the downside, but you've got the potential to still benefit from upside rallies. I just think that the risk of not doing anything is too great. And if the balance sheet plays out with the average crop on big yields, cash corn prices and bean prices, for that matter, this fall are going to be well under cost production. So I just reiterate, be defensive on rallies. And we're looking for the potential for a rally the next few weeks to begin that process.
Elaine?
Yeah, I think there's a temptation to sort of poo-poo the coronavirus story and say, well, more people die of the flu than have died of coronavirus. And that may be true, but we really are seeing evidence of, you know, depressed consumer demand in the world's second largest economy. And it's certainly playing out on the crude oil markets. And I think we'll continue to see those knock-on effects in commodities. So just an encouragement, again, to not just brush that aside and fully account for that bearishness in your own outlook.
Mike Zuzulo.
Just very briefly, I think the 2020 marketing year could be a very major mirror type mindset where it looks really bleak and really negative. But that the demand, if the prices are low enough, because we are tightening up the supplies, U.S. wheat stocks are about 13 or 14% tighter than they have been the last couple of years. Soybean ending stocks in this week's report was not negative. I think this is where, you know, you really want to get a longer term plan, a mindset that doesn't get shaken up by an acreage report that comes out tomorrow. And those numbers get updated a week from Friday as well. So don't play the short term, play more the longer term.
Yeah, those are the pre-ag forum reports, right?
Yes, exactly.
And Bill Lapp, your final word.
I guess of the three speakers, Chip outlined it best is, you know, Find a way to take advantage of this and get ahead of the market. I just kind of at a 30,000 foot level, I'm looking at lack of Chinese purchases, coronavirus negatively impacting in some way, and USDA coming out on February 21st with their stocks at the end of that year and stocks use ratio both for corn will be at 30 year highs. So we've got a reasonable price now, as Elaine mentioned, and I think it's probably should be in the mindset of producers rather than thinking about what the opportunity is with flooding this spring and a price rally there. What should I be doing today given the constructs and maybe a more normal growing season?
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org, willag.org, and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Bill Lapp of Advanced Economic Solutions out of Omaha, Nebraska, Elaine Cub of ElaineCub.com out of Ipswich, South Dakota, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo at GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.